Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
ES Audio.
From the Evening Standard in London, I'm Rochelle Travers, and this is The Leader. Could Ukraine win this war? The Evening Standard reports Volodymyr Zelensky's troops have captured so much territory they've now reached the border with Russia. Vladimir Putin's soldiers have been pushed back northeast of Kharkiv, Ukraine's second largest city. Ukrainian forces have also been retaking territory in northeastern areas in recent days, as Russian forces focus on the Donbass region further south. Our defence editor, Robert Fox, is with me. Robert, how big an achievement is it for Ukrainian forces to reach the Russian border?
It's an achievement, but getting to the border is really symbolic because the real fight now is along the Donetsk River, where the main effort now of the Russian ground forces in Ukraine is to surround what they see as the best and the biggest element of the Ukrainian armed forces, about 8 or 9 brigade groups. And they've got them surrounded on 3 sides, but the Ukrainians keep fighting, and the Russians, although they've got numerical superiority, seem to be fighting really rather badly.
What does this mean in terms of the bigger picture?
Well, Russia is doing very badly on the information and propaganda war, because in this operation to really corral or kettle the Ukrainian regular ground forces along the Donetsk River, they fared very badly because there has been imagery of the Russians attempting an armed river crossing. Apparently, they've tried it in 2 or 3 places, but one in particular where they were just smashed up by Ukrainian drones. And then, of course, heavy artillery fire. They think, analysts in the West and the Ministry of Defense think that up to 400 Russian soldiers will have died out of a group of 1,000. Now, this has gone into social media and gone out on Telegram, and this is beginning to seep through now to the Russian bloggers who realize that things are not going so well. By the way, they've got Russian bloggers, it seems, embedded with the Russian forces in Ukraine.
Ukraine has gotten this far. Would they ever put a foot on Russian land?
No, I think what they're really trying to do is to cut off supply to the Russian ground forces. And we have seen some efforts, they've not been claimed, though, to blow up ammunition, but above all, fuel dumps. And I think that they will keep that going. I think they will want to keep the Russians guessing. What it's known as in military circles is throwing them off balance. It's disrupt and throw off balance. And that is where the Ukrainian forces have been much more successful than even their Western trainers and sponsors would have thought just 3 or 4 months ago.
At this stage, can Ukraine win this war?
That's the thing. That's the obvious question, and it is the political question. But it's very difficult to say in what terms winning or losing will be. Russia has taken a large amount of Ukrainian territory since February the 24th, which Ukraine would like to get back, quite a lot of it. I think we're beginning to see the shape of a stalemate now. And the stalemate will occur around the Donbass, because if you look at the map of what is going on at the moment, that Russia Russian forces have got control of Luhansk, one of the two Donbass enclaves, one of the two so-called autonomous republics, to whose defense Putin initially called in the Russian forces. That's in Russian hands, but Donetsk, which is more spread out and goes up to the river, is not so well. There's not a point, it's called a decision point, where the Russians can go firm and say, that's all right, let's talk Turkey now and let's have a bit of a truce. I think that's coming, by the way. I think it can only be just a few weeks away because the Russian forces are exhausted. I think the Ukrainian forces must be exhausted, but there's a lot to play for. I think, interestingly, we're concentrating far too much on the Donbass. We've really got to consider what happens on the Black Sea coast and, above all, with the port of Odessa.
What can Putin do to reverse his fortunes?
Well, that's the 60 billion ruble question, I think, because if he's going to succeed in the way that he's set out, it's going to be a really big effort. I think he's got to raise another entire army to go into Ukraine, even if he is going to possess and hold and occupy the areas of the Donbass, which we've talked about, and above all, the Black Sea coast, the bits that they've got already, to try and force this corridor so you could join it all up. Crimea, which Russia took over in 2014, but which was detached, then along the coast through Mariupol and the Donbass, it's a very big ask, particularly when you think that the Western defense agencies, particularly Brit and US, calculate they've lost between 30 and 40% of the combat power. That is the effective use of the force that they put into Ukraine in rather a chaotic fashion, as it now appears, on February the 24th.
There's a lot of talk of Sweden and Finland joining NATO. Is that likely?
They will be admitted, although Turkey, interestingly, is objecting to them. It's very interesting because they say that Finland and Sweden support the PKK, the radical Kurdish insurgent movement. And it's always a problem with the Turks. Turkey is a very, very interesting ally in this. It's semi-detached. It's not really a genuine democracy, which you have to be in the terms of the treaty, which is the club rules for NATO, the Atlantic Treaty, the Washington Agreement. And so they're to one side. So Mr. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan can't shout the odds too much. But Turkish drones are very, very important indeed. And Turkey is suffering quite badly now from this war because Turkey desperately needs those grain supplies, which it habitually gets from Ukraine and indeed parts of Russia. And Russia has been holding off that and has been looting the big grain elevators and silos outside Odessa. And Turkey is very fed up with this, and its dimension that's hardly considered but just appearing is that Turkey could side with Egypt, would you believe it, which is in desperate need of Ukrainian maize and particularly wheat, to make a real effort to get into Odessa, to break the blockade, to use the port to get the grain out. But also the problem, the food and grain angle is so important, and it is of global significance, that the Ukrainian farmers can't get on the ground in most of the territory for the planting season, which should be happening right now.
If Sweden and Finland join NATO, what does that mean for Russia?
Russia will go mad, as it has already been shouting the odds and said it would take retaliatory measures. That's likely to be cutting off fuel supplies, which could possibly affect Finland more than Sweden and make a lot of noise. But if you're not selling your fuel to Western Europe, it's very difficult to switch for Russia to sell a lot more fuel to India, but above all China, because it's particularly difficult to manage the pipeline system to get the fuel to go direct to China. In fact, it's almost impossible physically in some parts. So it's quite something. But for Sweden and Finland, it's very important for the West. As you know, that Britain has signed a friendship treaty, recent friendship agreement with both countries. And it's particularly important in the case of Finland. Finland has a population of about 5.5 million, but it's a formidable military power. It has a tiny army and armed forces of about 25, maximum 30,000, including militia police, but it can call out in an instant, in a matter of weeks, over 250,000 fighters who are well-trained, well-versed and experienced. It's called the Total Defense System. And Britain is very interested in it because they know how to use reserves for all kinds of tasks, including things where we've seen the British troops involved, like COVID duties, resilience against natural disasters, weird weather, breakdowns in utility supplies, electricity, and so on. The Total Defense System knows how you use reserves there, and Britain really wants to learn that from them.
Let's go to the ads. Stay there to hear from Jochen Embley from the Evening Standard's Culture Desk about Ukraine's Eurovision win. Whilst you're here, why not give the leader a rate and follow? Welcome back. In other Ukraine news, there was this moment over the weekend. Stefania, mama, mama,
Stefania. So we have a winner!
The winner
of the Eurovision Song Contest 2022 is Ukraine!
Yes, Ukraine's Kalish Orchestra won Eurovision. It was a huge moment of solidarity, and Ukraine insists it will host the competition next year. But will it be able to? Jochen Embley is from the Evening Standard's Culture Desk.
I mean, I think you can tell from the sort of reaction that you've seen, you know, both from President Zelensky and from Ukrainians themselves, the civilians, just kind of what a symbolic victory this has been for them. I think no one's obviously under any illusions that Eurovision means as much as, you know, victory in the war does, of course. But I mean, I think it's a show of solidarity for Ukrainian culture as much as anything, I think. You know, because I think a lot has been talked about, you know, of course, the attack on Ukrainian land, but it's also been an attack on Ukrainian culture. And to see a Ukrainian song come and, you know, conquer Europe like it has, I think that means a lot. It's a hugely, hugely symbolic victory for Ukraine and its music, I think.
They've now returned to Ukraine to help fight in the war, haven't they?
Yeah, so I think one of their members actually didn't make the final in Turin because they stay involved in the war effort back in Ukraine. And then the rest were allowed to leave on temporary visas. But yeah, no, they're heading back now to get involved. I mean, the frontman of the Kalish Orchestra, he runs a volunteer organization that helps with the humanitarian effort. And he has been doing that for, since the invasion started. So yeah, I mean, it's I think for all the sort of euphoria and the joy of Saturday night, it definitely brings it back to reality when you realize that, you know, now that they've done competing in Eurovision, they're heading back to the front line, really.
Eurovision rules means that as winners, Ukraine will host next year's competition. What do we know about how this will work?
Well, I mean, President Zelensky has come out and said that Eurovision will be in Ukraine next year. And, you know, he even hopes to host it in Mariupol, which is, of course, the besieged port city. Whether that happens or not clearly remains to be seen. No one can really predict how the war will go from this point onwards. But I think definitely the intent and the dream to host Eurovision in Ukraine next year is certainly there.
We all know it costs a lot to host Eurovision. Do you think it will be possible for them to host, given how much money will be going into the war effort?
Yeah, again, I think it's one of these things that remains to be seen, sadly. Yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it? I think the intent is there, whether the sort of economic capability is there as well. I think it's something that could only really be discussed once the conflict has come to an end, I suppose. But yeah, like I said, Zelensky wants to do it. I know the Ukrainian commentator who commentated on Eurovision from a bunker in Ukraine, he said that he would desperately want to host it were it to be in Ukraine next year. So yeah, the intent is there. Whether it is possible, I think we'll just have to wait and see.
And that's it from The Leader. This podcast is back tomorrow at 4 p.m.
Hey,
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.